receiver's out. He dropped the ball. Cutler gets it back and throws to Forte for touchdown.
Second and six. Forte motions out, takes the swing. Open field. Forte turns the corner. Run for Mariani. Touchdown for Forte.
It's the future.
Down and distance on WGNRadio.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Down and Distance here on WGNRadio.com. Jared Payton alongside my man Sean Davis sitting in with me. We have a treat today because anytime I get to talk football with the Don Corleone of Bears football, it always is a pleasure. And Sean, I don't know if you know this. When we had the game, there was one day I walked into the studio and looked at OC, our producer, and he goes, "So you looking forward to today?" I said, "What do we got today?" He's like, "You're talking Bears with Moon, Mullen." I was like, "Huh?" Man, I talked to Moon. I asked him so many questions. Harry and Spike had no room to get in any questions. And it was always good because we were getting right into the beginning of the season. So with no further ado, my man Moon Mullen from CSN Chicago sitting in with me. Follow him on Twitter at CSN Moon Mullen, the man, the myth, the legend. And I said, the Don Corleone of Bears football. How you doing, sir?
Good. You read that just the way I wrote it for you.
Always good. Well, we're sitting here now. The season is now over for the Bears. And I think a lot of reflecting to do on this season and just on this roster. And I think what is going to come down the line as we look to 2016 and also this draft coming up. When you look at the season, first year underneath John Fox and Ryan Pace and this new regime, your thoughts on just how things went all year long?
You know, Jared, I was actually maybe the most, I won't say optimistic, because I not as a rooting interest. I'm shocked that they were 6-10. I thought they'd be a lot better, and I think so did some coaches down there. The one thing that jumps out at me about it, and when I look at that record, is, you know, the talk about the talent. Well, they don't have enough talent. Well, the guys who actually ended up, I won't say pointing fingers at individuals, but the San Francisco game, it's Robbie Gould. It's in the first Minnesota game, it's Antrell Roll, who was kind of waited for the interception, you know, almost like a rookie mistake. So they lost games. Games were being lost with pivotal plays, not by the rookies or the guys who weren't good enough. They're actually the ones you didn't think would be the problem. So you pull the camera back and say, wow, they should have won at least three more games if they had just made if guys had made plays that they make all the time on the back of their football and baseball card. So that's the more the surprise of the whole thing. I thought they would be quite a bit better, and I think certain coaches did too.
You start to look at it, and I think as the year went on of how – you know, some of these losses, and I'm just looking at them right now. You're looking at how close they were in some of these games, where the Broncos game and mm-hmm. what you lose by two in that one. And even, you know, you start to look down the line and you're going, you lose by six against the 49ers. And then
the first Minnesota game. You're talking about playoff. These are playoff teams.
These are playoff teams. And so they really aren't that far off. And I have to be honest with you. I was only a six-win guy for this team. I thought that they would be just maybe a slightly bit better than they were the year before, just because I still look at the roster saying you need playmakers, you need difference makers. But then as I started to see these games and the close games, I'm going, well, I know they are better coached than they were mm-hmm. a year ago.
That makes the whole better than the sum of the parts. And that's what I think the good coaching staff brings out. I won't say it makes a bad player good, but it makes everybody work together better. And I think we saw the last year under Mark Trestman in particular. That's a great contrast. You knew that team was a train wreck because the losses were getting worse and worse and worse. Again, it sounds – you're not talking about moral victories when you say how close the games were, but it really does tell you that they really aren't as far away. And this is a team that was losing those games you're talking about Adam Gase now is what he did with the offense. Well, he did it all without Kevin White at all, without Alshon Jeffrey for basically half the season, without Eddie Royal for half the season, and Marquise Wilson. Those top four weren't even on the field for the last – Zach Miller and Martellus Bennett. And then on defense, it was interesting. One of the guys came up to me at the end in the locker room after the last game. Of the defensive linemen they put on the field for that last game, only one of them, Will Sutton, was with that team in training camp. Wow. So again, injuries are part of the game, and that happens. But they were this close, whatever you want to say about it, with all of those negatives about them. I think if you give them either, let's give you Alshon Jeffrey the whole season, give me Kevin White the whole season, let's see how we are on offense.
Well, Moon, I really do. If you look at having Alshon Jeffrey for the entire season, offensively, it changes. Those numbers change drastically because without him in the lineup, you started to see it where they weren't able to go down the field. Mm-hmm. And that's something offensively I saw where they could not take shots down the field. You saw them here and there, but without Alshon Jeffrey, they were dink and dunk here and there, short passes, trying to spring those into big gains. But in this league, we see it on every single team. There is that dominant receiver.
Somebody can take the top completely off the defense, which Kevin White was supposed to do, or Alshon, who's going to be. Well, you know, well, Jared, how much tougher a defense is when the safety doesn't have to worry about a deep threat.
Or just a guy that is big enough that can make plays where you have to mm-hmm. figure out to say on one side of the ball, listen, we need to have someone over the top on this guy. We're going to have to double this guy, figure out how, which leaves somebody else open. I've been on record of saying this, Moon, and I'm still upset because – I understand everything that went down with Brandon Marshall. But as I sit here and I think about it and watch what he's done, and the one thing about him that you can't knock, he was always on the football field. Mm-hmm. And to see what he was doing this season with the Jets and then looking and saying, well, I understand why things could have been a train wreck. You know why? Because you look at the coach and you look mm-hmm. at everything else that was going on. To me, it takes a strong person to be able to put someone like that in check. And it's the same thing going on here in Chicago now with Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
People
yeah,
are
it's not unique to football, that's for sure.
People are upset with him because he's speaking. But, you know, microphones come into your face when you make plays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have anybody else around in your organization to stand up and to speak, well, then guess what? That guy's going to say something, like it or not. So you just better get ready for it. That's what Brandon was all about. He spoke, but because he was making plays and people wanted to hear him talk, inside that locker room, was he the best? Maybe, probably not. But does a guy like John Fox, can he be a guy that kind of changes things? I think so, mm-hmm. because I'll tell you why. In the year that in Arizona, Super Bowl, sitting with Charles Tillman after he won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, Maurice Jones-Drew and Thomas Davis – and Anquan Boldin, and we're all sitting around, and some other guys were sitting around, and the first thing that we talked about was who's going to be the coach, da, 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 John Fox, and Maurice Jones-Drew came out and said, man, everybody who I've ever talked to who's played for the guy loves him. He is a player's coach. He knows how to deal with veterans on those days where they might not need to practice.
But he knows how to deal with pros.
He knows how to deal with pros. And I sat there. I didn't say one word. I was just soaking in all the information. I didn't say anything at the time because I was like, I'm not going to say anything. I want, you know, taking this conversation and just kind of storing it in the back, and I'll use it one day. If anybody could have changed things or been a great mentor mm-hmm. for him, I think it would be him. But offensively, right? You talked about it. Adam Gase now. We all knew coming into this season and that it was probably going to be maybe one and done.
One and done. That's what I said. Wrote that way back. I said, you know, right after he was hired, this is probably the only season he and Cutler will be together, because if it goes real badly, Cutler's gone.
Yeah.
If it goes real well, Gase is gone. You know, somewhere in between
that
might happen, but that's pretty unlikely because and Jay certainly played well. And I think a tremendous amount, or maybe the biggest amount of credit, goes to him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so often that seed kind of fell on barren ground with him. If whatever coordinators were selling him, he wasn't buying.
Boy,
so this was a great confluence of the right guy, the right words falling on the right ear at this time.
Yeah, it seems like it was perfect for where Jay is mm-hmm. as a person, not just as a football player, because you think people forget about that. These athletes are human, you know.
And a lot went on in his life, but you know, and they were kind of about what this year was, and that's maybe the second biggest impression, or the oh boy, that's interesting for me, was Jay Cutler, because you know, let's go rewind back to 09 or 2010, and you think back to the receivers he had. No knock, but Devin Hester, Johnny Knox. You know, he lost Greg Olsen at that point, you know, after a year. how he was, you know, to use the phrase, but the pout face was alive and well.
It was everywhere.
And now you fast forward 5 years later, he's still working kind of with Johnny Knox and Devin Hester. I mean, no knock on Cameron Merritt. Those kids were doing, you know, Josh Bellamy, Mark Mariani. That's almost like what he had in 29 and 2010, but he was different. You know, I think he sort of was the guy who said, I'm going to make the guys around me better. So, again, I don't know that Mark Mariani, I think he benefited from Jay Cutler. And I think Cutler was finally at a point where he could make the players like a Tom Brady, not to use him in the same sentence, or Aaron Rodgers, guys who make, or Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, who make everybody around you better. And I think that was the big turnaround for Jay this year. He kind of grabbed the flag and said, follow me for the first time.
Which is, I never gave him credit for that. And I was, you know, I've been a big, I don't want to say, well, I'll just say it. I was a big Jay Cutler hater for a long period of time.
Interceptions will do that.
Yeah. I mean, I really was. I just didn't think that there was any way that you could actually fix the problems because of some of the things that I was seeing. But talking to guys in that locker room, he's been a, they look at him as the leader. And I think you start to see that over this year where you can put his name in that category, because I was talking last night on some radio stations talking about how Cam Newton, look at what he's done and with the talent around him. And
he's got better and better.
Yeah, and he's making everybody around him better. And now, you know, throwing to guys like Jericho Cotchery, and I mean,
which I think may be the best name in all of pro football.
I know, right?
Yeah, the only all-name team for sure.
And I'm thinking about it going, wow, and he's in that MVP conversation. And I'm looking at Jay Cutler and going that this year was that true year. And I wrote this at the beginning of the season. I said, this is, everybody goes every year, they say it's a make or break season for Jay Cutler. But I said, no, this is really going to be it, because you look at what Adam Gase did and being in Denver and being around Peyton Manning, you knew that there was something that rubbed off in that relationship that he was going to be able to bring with him. And anytime I look at guys who, you know, if I'm standing around a bunch of guys who, you know, played football, but there's one guy that actually, you know, played in the NFL, other guys played in high school and kind of like, eh, yeah, whatever.
But that,
that guy that played, I want to, we need to talk. Yeah. And our conversation is going to, there's going to be something in our conversation that's going to connect. Anytime you bring up Peyton Manning in a conversation with a guy who's worked with him, let me know everything that he's doing. Because I want to do it, because I don't want to be like him, but I want to form my own legacy.
Well, he, you know, it's funny because I think one of the knocks or questions about Gase was, well, he only was with Peyton for 1 year as the OC, but then, obviously he was with him the year before with Mike McCoy. But to your point, Jared, if you're around guys, he's been around a great quarterback. He knows what a great quarterback looks like, how he drives, whatever. So he came in here with that cred. At the same time, you know, to borrow the old joke, you know, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb has to want to change. You know, so that's Jay. I mean, if it was the wrong, if he still was in the, my arm can cover any checks my head writes, it doesn't work. But this was the right guy coming in at the right time. And with your point, he had the cred. He worked with Peyton. He was around. Even if he didn't make him a great quarterback, he knows what a great quarterback looks like. And I think that's really that sunk in when Jay, at a time when Jay was ready to listen.
Yeah, I think about back in some of my days of how at college, where quarterbacks that really, really know the game, you want to sit down with them. And I wish I would have done this a little bit more, but Ken Dorsey, when I was at Miami, watching him, how he watched film was totally different than how I watch film. And I saw that one time by coming into a room when he was sitting in there and how he had his notepad and he was writing down plays, and he wasn't like, I was so used to just watching where he would write and then write what everybody was doing. And then the next play would be the same play, but if he saw this defense, and then he was writing everything. Mm-hmm. And I go, holy cow. I never even knew that. And so I started taking some of that stuff with me. And by the time I got to, and I know it took a little bit of time, but by the time I got to about 2007, when I got to Montreal, how I diagram plays and started to understand the game was a big part of that. Was
way different than what, and to that point, I think you get to some of the things that this coaching staff did. It wasn't as specific as watching a film, but I can't tell. I know Kadeem Carey comes really right to mind, but how many guys began to look at, let's say, the defense the way Vic Fangio did, not just my assignment, but knowing what everybody else does. I know where the backer is. I know who's got my back. I know who's got which gap. So that's a much more holistic look, and you still do your job, but if you know, have a sense of what everyone else is going to do, Pernell McPhee would talk like that. That's when you become a better football player. Matt Forte talked, you know, knowing protection schemes, knowing not just knowing the offense, but now knowing the defense, and that little things like that, and that's what Ken Dorsey was watching.
I mean, that's what makes all these quarterbacks the best.
And that's what I think we'll make. You know, we get back to the coaching that the Bears got. Now they have the staff and whatever's left of it after if Gase leaves, but Fangio, Fox, this is how they coach, and that's going to filter into players. So you got guys who I think are smarter. I mean, that's. They're not just looking at their guy. They understand where they fit in the overall. And that's why I do think that they make the whole greater than the sum of the parts.
You know, it makes me think. I spent time with Mark Trestman.
You want to put the pads on right now, don't you? You want to go. You want to go.
I do, but I spent time with Mark Trestman, you guys, and being in his meeting rooms and how he was so entrenched and with detail, with everything, and you know, not just knowing your position, but knowing everybody else's position, to me, it makes it even clearer now that, you know what, the respect wasn't there. Guys did not, they didn't respect him because I know how he goes about his business of sitting and thinking. There was a time in, and I never told this story either because I kept it in, but the last year at training camp, I walked in to get some water in the main office at training camp, and I go to get something, and as I'm sitting there, he walks out, and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Just getting some water real quick." And then Trestman looks at me and goes, "You want to watch some film?" I was like, "Yeah, why not?" Brings me in. I'm sitting there watching film with him, practice film, and we're just sitting there watching practice film from camp. And I'm just watching guys, and he's showing me, telling me, and then he gets to a certain point, and he's like, "All right, that's enough. Can't watch anymore." And then he kicked me out. But I got to sit and watch 10 minutes with him with some film, and I was watching how he's writing everything down. But now it starts to make sense because we're seeing this now in how John Fox and his staff is going about it. There's some type of trust factor there, and I think it goes a long way with you've been there before. And guys know that you've been there before, that you've done this before, going, "We respect you," where it doesn't seem like that happened with Phil Emery and just with everything that was going on with Mark Trestman. But moving past them, you brought up a name that jumps out to me, that Chicagoans, after I tweeted this gift of Matt Forte scoring and just saying that this is the last time we see you in a Bears uniform, I want to tell you from the people here in Chicago that we thank you. What's going to be the future? I mean, what do you see happening with Matt Forte? Because the Bears are going to give – they'll probably offer him something. I mean, it can't be something crazy, but I feel like there's a team out there that will use his services, maybe the Patriots, that it's someone that will give him money.
It's right on the brink. In fact, you could look at the playoff teams this year and say, well, the phone will ring and say, you know, "Matt, hi, this is Bill Belichick." Or, "Hi, this is
anybody.
Sherm Lewis." Cincinnati, I'm thinking. Just pick a
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. Yeah, I'm thinking of Sherm Lewis. I think looking at the Bears rather than just at Matt Forte, what I think, and I kind of wrote this for CSN Chicago, is there'll be a little bit of a statement being made in how they handle Forte. Now, I don't think they're not going to get into a bidding where they just can't for a 1 year guy. But if you're and we're talking about teams like Cincinnati, like New England, a win now team. If you're John Fox and Ryan Pace, if this is a win now team, and everybody will laugh and say, "Oh, you're 6-10. Why don't you try getting to 500 first?" But if you see yourself as a team that, you know, we add a couple of guys, and Robbie makes that field goal, and Antrell breaks that pass up. Yeah. Then it starts to make a lot of sense to bring Matt Forte back because you can win. You know, it doesn't take – you don't have to be great. You just have to be better than some of the other guys in the race. Yeah. So – and I've raised the point with Ryan Pace. If you also look at your salary cap, you don't have a lot of money tied up at running back right now. You've got 2 fourth-round picks in Kadeem Carey and Jeremy Langford. You don't have a lot of dollars at that position, gross dollars. So you can afford, again, not to overpay him, but you know he's offered you a hometown discount already. So I've kind of done, I won't say a 180, but it really would make a lot of sense. If they make an effort, a sincere effort to bring him back, it tells me a little more about them. They are going to win. They think they can beat. I mean, they were within a broken pass. They beat the Packers. They were within a pass breakup beating the Vikings. They're not that far away. And if they treat if they view Matt Forte in that kind of a light, then to me it makes a little more sense to bring the guy back.
Yeah, because it. I mean,
you besides he's a good football player.
Yeah, you listen to Ryan Pace, and he was he commended. Matt Forte for how he went about his business this year, and saying that listen. He split carries and, was really good with everything. And that's hard for a guy that's so used to carrying the bulk and being, the feature back to kind of see your replacement there and be – and how do you not just say, I'm not going to teach him up. But listening to Jeremy Langford, Matt Forte was there helping him out.
He was a clinic every day at practice, and I think that's the great professionalism it's not every veteran who's willing, especially, and he's probably right at this point, he could honestly look at this kid and say, I can do everything he can do. I can do better. You could argue he could. He certainly is better in pass pro because kids don't do that in college much. But he knows the offense. Right at that moment, you could argue Matt Forte would look and say, I'm better than this kid. What am I sitting out for? Big picture, he would say, if I'm fine with cutting back carries. I teach the kid. I'm a good example for the kid. And now, and you bring up what Ryan Pace said, he really liked the way that running back room was. Well, that included Matt Forte.
Yeah.
That was. It didn't sound like it was a fond farewell coming from Ryan Pace. It was, I think, here's a little, we kind of like you. And I don't know if they're going to do it, but there's no get him out of here feeling.
How did things change, though? Let's say Matt doesn't get injured, because leading up to that point, he was putting in a lot of work, and Jeremy Langford was kind of coming in at every little once in a while, sprinkle here and there. If he doesn't get that knee, you never know what happens. I mean, he was on pace to, wasn't he leading the NFL in rushing?
He was, like, I think he was second. He was certainly near the second or third. But I think, and Jerry, talking about things he does just better than Jeremy, he also catches the ball better.
Yeah.
Which not to,
That was pretty obvious.
That hurt. That hurt Jeremy. But, I think that there's so much left in that tank that, like I said, the big picture, if you're the Bears, how do you see yourself? Now, if I get, now we're moving into some maybe things that need to get changed, they need a guard because, Vlad Dukas and Pat Omame didn't really do it. They each one took the job from the other. But the point is, if you muscle up a little more in front of them, for instance, now you've really added to Matt Forte's longevity. It really makes him a better, not the guards that are primary need, but there's nothing, you don't gain anything by letting Matt Forte go.